Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. So, as obviously, as soon as last week's episode was uploaded and ready to be released, we got the very sad news on Sunday night that Bob Saget had died in a hotel room in Orlando at the age of 66. It sucks, obviously. It's terrible. I know that, like, celebrity deaths, there's, like, this lore that they come in clusters, and we lost Betty White on New Year's Eve, and I guess none of us were just expecting it to be Bob Saget, someone so young and seemingly full of life and who was regularly working. He died like hours after finishing a show in Orlando. Like, he was on tour. He was going to be in my area in a couple of weeks, in the Philadelphia area. He was, you know, he was still doing TV, was just on Fuller House, like, didn't seem to have many medical issues, didn't seem to have addiction issues, and just like that, dropped dead out of nowhere in a hotel room. I mean, wild and so consistent with what the world is right now, that the entire fucking planet is on fire, kind of literally. Like, I am in the Philadelphia, New Jersey area, and it seems like every day on the news, I'm used to it being like, here were all the shootouts that happened in Philadelphia today, and that's still happening, but it's being coupled with, here are all the freaking house fires that happened in Philadelphia and New Jersey this week, and it's just crazy. We're on the brink of World War III with fucking Ukraine and Russia, and we lost Betty White and Bob Saget within, like, 2 weeks of each other. What the fuck is going on? My God. And then this week also, Ronnie Spector died after being diagnosed like a week ago with cancer. Robert Durst, I mean, this isn't a sad one. This is a good riddance, see you in hell death. But Robert Durst, who you may know from The Jinx on HBO, which I think came out 5 or so years ago, which was about the murders of Robert Durst's ex-wife and friend, both of whom disappear under mysterious circumstances, and he's the prime suspect in both and was never arrested or convicted or charged or anything like that. His life was turned into a movie. I think it was called All the Good Things, where he was played by Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst was his ex-wife. Anyway, there was this documentary series, The Jinx, that was very well received, aired on HBO. And then in the final episode, Robert Durst basically admitted on a hot mic to murdering both women. And he was convicted last year, the year before, of the murder of his friend, Kathy, not of his ex-wife. I think his ex-wife might have been Kathy. Regardless, he died in prison where he was serving his term at the age of 78. He was an old, frail, awful man, and he's dead too. But holy shit, like, just a dumpster fire of a week, of a couple of weeks, of a couple of years, let's be real. Yeah, this sucks. I loved Bob Saget. He was so much fun. You know, like everyone else in every other millennial, I obviously grew up watching Full House. I even liked Fuller House. I know that's a controversial opinion, but I really enjoyed it for the most part. And yeah, poor Bob Saget. Ugh. TV legends, like, gone so close to there is so terrible. All right, well, enough of the sad stuff. So other news this week. Disney Plus, this is... For a week of such sad news with, like, Bob Saget, this news made me literally gasp and cheer when I read it. And it is that Disney Plus has ordered 2 series and will soon start filming a TV series sequel to the Santa Claus movies, which I just talked about in my Christmas episode last month. So, I love the Santa Claus, even though it taught an entire generation of people the incorrect way to spell Claus because they didn't pay close enough attention and there is no E in Santa Claus. Go ahead and listen to that episode for that rant. I have been clamoring for now over 15 years for another Santa Claus movie, mostly because the third one sucked. It was very bad and very stupid and very childish, and no one liked it. And I pretend it doesn't exist. I've wanted another Santa Claus movie to wash the bad taste of the third movie out of our mouths and to get to, like I said in that Christmas episode, I operate solely on coffee and nostalgia. Like that's what my body runs on. It runs on caffeine and memories of better times. And the Santa Claus for me was such a happy part of my childhood. I want more of it. And even though Tim Allen is a certified douche nozzle, even though Disney is a ridiculous conglomerate, even though they shat all over our childhoods with the new Home Alone movie, I want more Santa Claus content. And this new series is going to give me that. And they're supposedly starting filming in March, which means that it should be ready to go for this coming Christmas, which, like, let's hope the world makes it until then. Because, like I said, brink of World War III. Let's hope we're all around to see this new Santa Claus TV series. It basically is going to be Tim Allen starring as Scott Calvin or Santa Claus, realizing that he's now getting very old and is not going to be around forever and starts to look for his successor, which I'm going to be totally honest. When I was watching the Santa Claus, the movie, the first one this year, and then I watched the second one where he's looking for the wife, and I was like, why is there no Santa Claus movie four where it's him like passing on the torch? Like, at some point, we know that Scott Calvin is going to get old. And like, obviously, we see Santa Claus as an old man, like, that's our image of him. But as we know from these movies and within this mythology, Santa is perpetually the same age at Christmas, but his actual body, like Scott Calvin in the movies, in the first one at least, is like in his 30s. He has an 8-year-old kid. So at the oldest, he's probably like maybe 40, 42. And I don't think he's that old. But even still, that movie came out almost 30 years ago. So we're looking at a man in his 60s, 70s. Needing to look for his replacement. I mean, I think the natural progression of things would be for him to pass on to Charlie, which I would love to see. Eric Lloyd was so wonderful in those movies. Would love to see him come back. But regardless, we're getting that series this year, and I fucking can't wait. I already miss Christmas. I feel like January is such a dark time for me personally because one, it's always like the coldest, snowiest, grossest month of the year. It's the first month of the year, so we're all putting stress on ourselves to like make it a good year. It never is. Everyone's like got New Year's resolutions. Social media is full of people like and their resolutions and trying to be good people on social media, but we know they're being awful in real life. This year we have Omicron running rampant, so we're all dodging that. It's never all that great. And on top of that, it's the first month where like the magic of Christmas is gone. And I always miss Christmas most in January. So like hearing this news was very uplifting to my soul. So I can't wait for that. That should be coming Christmas 2022. Another revival that was announced this week that is coming is, or another sequel, maybe even, is Justified is coming back to FX with a spin-off sequel series subtitled Primeval City, which is based on a new Leonard Elmore book. And Timothy Oliphant is coming back as what is his name? Rylan? Raylan? Why can't I remember his name? You know what I'm talking about. Raylan. Raylan Givens. Jesus, why'd that take me forever? Good Lord. I'm having brain farts. Okay, so Raylan Givens, he is coming back as Raylan Givens, and this is about, I think it was 6 or 7 years that the Justified finale aired. I only watched the first season of Justified. I did not hang on like everyone else did, and I know it was a great show, and I should watch it at some point. I probably will. But it's coming back to FX, and it should be filming sometime this year. it is going to follow Raylan after he leaves Kentucky and is in Miami, and he is a marshal and a father to a teen girl. And if they follow the book that this is based on, he has a chance encounter with a Florida highway on a Florida highway that he then travels to Detroit, where he crosses paths with a sociopath known as the Oklahoma Wild Man. So that should be fun. And Justified was, for all intents and purposes, a great series, one of the final shows in like the golden era of premium cable or basic cable. I think FX is basic cable now. Whatever. Not premium because it's not a paid service, but basic cable, where it was kind of the same time as like American Horror Story and that whole time when like FX was kind of at the top of its game, The Americans. So FX trying to get back in that game after they just announced earlier, or not earlier this year, or later, late last year, that they were dissolving their FX on Hulu branch, which is like basically putting shows on Hulu, but FX still owning them. So like American Horror Stories was one of them, and so was A Teacher, which I hated. That they're getting rid of that and they're going back to FX and then sending things to Hulu, not this like hybrid model. So that's coming probably next year, I would say. And then finally, in renewal and cancellation news, lots and lots of renewals this week, starting with the big one that Emily in Paris on Netflix got renewed for seasons 3 and 4. Over on ABC, Grey's Anatomy got a season 19 renewal, and Station 19, its spinoff, also got renewed. Apple TV renewed The Morning Show for a third season, and Hulu also renewed The Great for a third season. And then somehow, One of Us is Lying got a second season on Peacock. Now, there is a book sequel to One of Us is Lying called One of Us is Next. So I don't know if they're going to follow that story. I never finished the first season of One of Us is Lying because I hated it. But yeah, that's coming back for a second season. And the only cancellation this week was a Netflix show that I had never heard of, but that like people were in an uproar over on Twitter. And it had two seasons. It was called Gentified, not Gentrified, Gentified. And I have no idea what it was, but that got canceled. And now the creator is all over the internet talking about how much she hates Netflix, even though they gave her two seasons of a show that somehow survived two seasons, despite me never hearing of it and not a single person I know ever watching it. So there you go. Coming up today on the podcast, I'm talking about the first couple of episodes of 911 Lone Star's third season, which is more of the same if you have ever watched 911 Lone Star. And I'm also talking about the season finale of Yellow Jackets, which I know this is the third episode in a row I'm talking about Yellow Jackets. Sorry, deal with it, but the season's over now, so you'll be spared after today. So stay tuned for that. As I'm sure we all realize at this point, if you've ever listened to this podcast before, I love stupid TV. I really do. I love things that are dumb. I love things that don't require much thought. I have a soft spot in my heart for things that exist just to entertain me. I feel like there's nothing wrong with that. And I also feel like we're at a time now that we think of as like the golden age of TV, and there is so much TV. There's so much streaming. There's very little on broadcast, but there's just so much like prestige TV out there. And like today, I'm recording this on Wednesday, the SAG Award nominations came out. And from what I can recall off the top of my head, there was not a single nomination for anything that was on broadcast TV. And for the past couple of years, that's been relegated pretty much to just This Is Us on NBC. Like, I think one of the maybe the only traditional TV station even that got nominated might have been HBO. Like, everything that's about streaming, right? It's Ted Lasso on Apple TV. It's stuff on Hulu, on Netflix, on Amazon. It's all of these streaming services that have money to burn. So they're going out and getting top-tier A-list talent. You know, you had Nicole Kidman on Hulu last year in Nine Perfect Strangers, and Melissa McCarthy in that as well. We have Kate Winslet on HBO. We have all of these amazing celebrities lining up to do TV now, and that's not something that used to be the case when it was just broadcast and cable. But just because something is good, is well done, is well written, doesn't mean I want to watch it. I'll let you in on that little secret. If something is wonderful, I'm all for it. I hope I get around to it at some point. But like, if I have worked all day and like, let me lay out my Monday schedule for you. I wake up at 5:15 a.m. I brush my teeth. I go downstairs. I do a 30 to 40 minute cardio session. I then shower, shave, get ready for work, leave at this time of year well before sunrise to get my coffee. Then I make my 35 to 40 minute commute, depending on traffic, to teach my 8 a.m. class until 11:45 a.m. Then I get in my car. I stop somewhere to get lunch on the way to my second job, where I am at from 12:30 until at least 4:30, when I have to go to the bank to make a deposit for that job. Then, if I still have more work to do, I will go back to the office to finish. Then I will get home. And I have a 20-minute commute then from that office back to my house. So I get back home around 6 o'clock. Then I get dinner and it's dark out and I left in the dark and I've now had about a 13-hour day and I'm finally like sitting down and taking a second for myself. So on Mondays, like when I have that crazy schedule, I don't want to watch a prestige drama. I want to watch something fucking stupid. So lucky for me, 911 and 911 Lone Star are on Mondays on Fox. So today I'm going to talk about 911 Lone Star, which is a very stupid show. That is on Mondays at 8 o'clock, currently on Fox. So 911 Lone Star, as you may deduce from the title, if you are unfamiliar, is a spinoff of 911, which is a Ryan Murphy, Brad Falchuk series that's on Fox. I think it's in its sixth season at the moment. It's Angela Bassett and Peter Krause, and first season was Connie Britton, and Jennifer Love Hewitt is on it now. And like, it's a huge ensemble cast, and it kind of combines the elements that people love about a procedural series of like, this is the event of the week, this is the crime, quote unquote, of the week, this is the theme of the week, is kind of how they frame it, where like all of the calls that the first responders and the 911 dispatchers tend to get center around a theme. Like animals or a holiday or whatever. So 911 Lone Star is very much that, but it takes place instead of in LA, where 911 is, in Austin, Texas, Lone Star. Now, this show is in its third season. The first episode premiered a couple of weeks ago. When this comes out, it'll be on a hiatus already because of football, and it will have aired two episodes of its third season. And it's very much in the same vein of 911, of like we're following a firehouse. We also are following paramedics and 911 dispatchers, and they're all kind of interrelated and working together, and friends and lovers and all that good stuff. But it also definitely has its own flavor. Like, I think it is more inherently absurd than 911. And I know if you watch 911, you're going to say, how? Because 911 is absolutely insane. It's nuts. A lot of the cases are based on real 911 calls, but they are like the most absurd 911 phone calls. And like every season of 911 and 911 Lone Star, like they start with this big event, right? Like this season on 911 Lone Star, it's this once in a lifetime winter storm that's coming through Texas, which is obviously based on the storm that happened last year that knocked out Texas's power grid. But then, like, it's stuff like a landslide, an earthquake, a tsunami, lava was last year's in 911 Lone Star. I believe it was last year. Like, a volcano erupted underneath the ground in Texas. Like, shit that makes no sense, right? And the way the people behave on Lone Star is what I think makes them more absurd than 911. So in this episode, in the premiere of this season, which I thought was going to be the first two episodes, and that was why they were taking a break for this football championship thing on a Monday, was that they were going to tell a premiere episode in two episodes, or a premiere story in two episodes. It's not. It's been two episodes, and there's still no resolution. Is about this big winter storm that comes through Texas and how Texas is so ill-equipped to deal with it and how the people don't know how to deal with it and they're like they're being idiots and stupid and all that. So like if you do watch 911 Lone Star, we left off last season, the 126, which is the firehouse where everyone works, is shut down for budget cuts and everyone's being relocated. So the paramedics that operated out of there are owned now by a private company. The firefighters have been dispersed to other houses, or in Rob Lowe's character's case, Owen, Captain Strand, he is just not a firefighter at the moment anymore because he beat up another firefighter and refuses to apologize for it. And he shouldn't. So everyone's kind of like spread out at the beginning of the season and dealing with the closure of the firehouse in their own way when the storm hits. Now, I'm not exaggerating when I say that there are about a dozen characters on the show that we need to keep track of. So we have Rob Lowe is Captain Strand. We then have his son TK, who is initially a firefighter, but then in season two becomes a paramedic. He is on this new private paramedic team along with Gina Torres's character, Tommy, who is the EMS captain. They are also joined by, oh my God, what is her name? I'm gonna say she's Nancy. Sorry if that's not who she is. The other one from the 126. I'm gonna say Nancy. Hopefully it's Nancy. They ride an ambulance together. Then we also have Judd, who was a firefighter and was the sole survivor before the series of a fire disaster that destroyed the firehouse's team. And his wife, Grace, is a 911 operator and she is pregnant. Working with Judd are Paul, a trans man who is a firefighter and a paramedic, Mateo, who is also known as Provy, who is now a full-fledged firefighter, also a dyslexic dreamer. They are all working together. Then, aside from all of that, there is also Marjan Firefox, who is the Muslim firefighter and paramedic who is famous on Instagram. And then, aside from that, we also have Carlos, who is TK's boyfriend, who is a cop. And those two are currently on the outs. And I think that's everyone that we follow regularly. And then there are a bunch of side characters. Like we also meet Tommy's twin daughters, and her husband died last season. So I'm sure they're going to pop up at some point. There's the deputy fire chief, I want to say. There's Billy, who is Billy Burke, who is the former firefighter that Owen beat up and has to apologize for. There are so many fucking characters, is what I'm getting at. There are so many fucking characters to keep track of. It's almost impossible. And in this premiere, they are all over the place and they're all doing weird shit because it's the winter. And like, I watch the show and every couple of minutes, I'm like, oh God, this show is so stupid. Oh God, how could the show get dumber? And then it does. Like, there is at one point, redneck skiing where like a guy is on skis being dragged by a pickup truck down the street as it snows, like drinking beer. And he nearly gets decapitated by a sheet of ice that falls off of a truck and almost completely severs his head. But his head is kept in place and he is kept alive by the fact that that ice is lodged in his neck. Now, I am no doctor, but I did take high school biology, chemistry, and physics. So we all know that his body temperature is going to melt that ice. And as it melts the ice, his blood starts to squirt everywhere. So what do? They pull the ambulance over in the middle of a snowstorm and start to pack his neck, which is barely hanging on by a strand, with more snow and ice to stop the bleeding. So this man just has a wall of ice sticking out of his neck. The fuck? Like, it's wild and stupid. Then there's like a homeless shelter where people are getting out of the snow, whose roof collapses, and the firefighters get trapped inside while they're looking for survivors. And then everyone's got hypothermia. And then TK pull and the ambulance pull over to help get a kid out from under the ice who fell through when he was playing hockey, and he has asthma and doesn't have his inhaler. And like, by the time they get there, this kid has to have been underneath the ice drowning for at least 10 minutes, probably more, and they magically revive him with this like machine that the private sector that owns them paid for. And none of it makes any sense because we never see them drop off the guy whose head is about to fall off. Then TK falls in the ice and he gets hypothermia and is running around naked and leaves at the end of the second episode, like on his deathbed because his extremities are dying. So all of his blood is rushing to his core to keep his organs safe. And he's like minutes away from dying. And I don't understand why this show has to go so hard all the time. I don't get it. I don't understand. Then we have Owen, Rob Lowe's character, stranded in like a cabin in the middle of the woods, who comes across a coyote, people who bring people illegally across the border from Mexico. And he gets shot in the arm and he's unconscious, brings him into his house, and then cauterizes his wound with a hot fire poker. What the fuck is wrong with this show? Like, why does everything have to be crazy? And then, like, why does the explanation always have to be crazy? Like, how do they find this kid in the ice? Well, it's a couple who are driving rescued turtles to a shelter, and the turtles escape when their car gets into an accident. Like, why does it have to be that weird? Why can't they just like get into an accident and see the kid's like hockey stick or something, and then see he's under the ice? Why do they have to follow a goddamn turtle out onto the ice that's being rescued and sent to an aquarium? Why? Why is this so stupid? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why can't we think of like real world explanations for things? Like, why can't we think of like crazy, strange things that happen in the field, but that are also semi-believable? Not that like someone almost gets decapitated by a sheet of ice that falls off of a truck while they're redneck skiing, being pulled by a pickup truck, drinking beer on a road in Austin, Texas, of all places. And then they're showing this snowstorm and it's just all whiteout conditions. Like, no one can see 2 feet in front of them, yet there's no snow on the actual ground. Like, did anyone making this episode ever experience snow? Or are they all just like from LA? It made no sense to me. Because like, I'm from the Northeast. I know what snow looks like. And I know that when there are whiteout conditions, there's typically also, it comes with like a lot of snow. So snow is on the ground. Like, they're at this collapsed roof at the high school where the homeless people are sleeping to get out of the snow. And it's like all the wind is blowing and you can't see anything. And the camera cranes up and there's like, you can see the road still. Like, there's snow falling and it's on the ground, but like you can see the road through the snow. So I'm gonna say it's like barely a coating. Which, like, around here, unless there's over 3 inches, like you're getting in your car and you're going to work that day, and maybe it'll take you a little bit more time to get to work, but like you get up and go. Maybe you drive a little slower. But that's why everyone around here in like Jersey and Pennsylvania and stuff, like everyone drives pickups and SUVs so that they can just get through the snow because no one cancels work around here for like less than 5 inches of snow. So, and like in this one, there's like so much ice all over that it's making roofs collapse, and it's thick enough that it's cutting people's heads off. This makes no sense. It makes no sense. But that's par for the course for 911, especially 911 Lone Star. But I watch it and I will continue to watch it because it is exactly what I need on a Monday night after I work a 12-hour day and I've been up it since well before dawn. And it's what I need to shut my brain off. And like, but again, it's so stupid that even after I've had this like long, exhausting day, I'm still watching it being like, wait a minute, they didn't think this through. Like, I've done nothing but think all day and work all day, and I still have enough wherewithal to be like, this doesn't make sense. It wasn't thought through. So that's really saying something about how silly this show is. But also, I don't care. I don't care. Sometimes it's what you need. Sometimes you need to watch it and shut your brain off. And that is what I do when I'm watching 911 Lone Star, which is on Monday nights on Fox at 8 o'clock, if you would like to join the stupidity. Okay, I know I literally just recommended Yellow Jackets last week and put it on my best of list the week before. So this is the third week in a row that you're listening to me talk about Yellow Jackets. But it is the finale this week, so bear with me and then we'll move on. As you know from my effusive praise in the past couple of episodes, I was very much enjoying the first season of Yellow Jackets. And then the finale happened. And not that the finale was bad, because it wasn't. It was a great episode, but as a finale, it pissed me off. And I even talked about this when, maybe 2 episodes ago, about how we typically are moving away from like underexplained, unexplained, or cliffhanger endings to series because the television landscape is so unknown and so unpredictable that creators and writers are taking fewer chances on whether or not they will be renewed. So they're telling complete stories and like leaving viewers with answers while still having questions. And so like Hightown season 2 was one of them where like I was complaining about that because they really didn't resolve anything in Hightown. And they resolved almost nothing this episode of Yellow Jackets either. So I'm going to spoil the ever-living fuck out of the finale of Yellow Jackets. So I know that it literally just happened. If you're listening to this on Monday when it comes out, yesterday. So if you haven't watched the finale yet and you don't want to be spoiled, you should stop listening to this episode until you watch it and then come back. Unless you don't care about spoilers, then feel free to go ahead and listen. So, okay. I don't know how much to actually recap because this show is so friggin' wild that I don't know if I should just like talk about the episode or the whole show or the plot or just like what pissed me off about it. But okay, so basically the whole season, we start the show. Episode 1, season 1, scene 1 is like the girls crash in the wilderness. There's some like ritual killing, and we know that they eat somebody. We don't know who it is that they're eating. We don't know who is eating them. Like, we don't know who the survivors are at that point. We're led to believe that the 6 people who survived and are in this culty wilderness, cannibalistic Lord of the Flies in the snow shit. We are led to believe that they are, at the very least, that it's, Shauna and Nat and Misty and Ty, and it's the people that we have seen in the present so far. And then obviously there are others, and we're like led down the path of thinking that the person they're eating is Jackie, because we do not see her in the present, so we know that she is, so we assume that she is dead. But then, like, throughout the season, we kind of learn, like, oh, this is a more complicated thing. This could really be almost anyone. So, like I said in my best of recap, that like there is, or maybe it was last week, again, I don't remember, that like they're seeing kind of the way that these characters' fates are ending up, like, especially the ones we have not seen in the present, is the interesting part. Like, we assume that like Van and Laura Lee and Jackie, we assume they're dead because we don't meet them. But that may not be the case. Like, there is an episode where Van gets attacked by wolves and has her face almost ripped off, and we assume she's dead, but she survives. So maybe she doesn't die. Maybe she just dies a different way. Laura Lee could have been a good candidate for being cannibalized, but then we see that she blows up in a plane. And it still could be Jackie. And then until this final episode where we see the season finale, where we see Jackie, one of the only answers we get is Jackie's fate. We see her frozen to death in the snow, a la Jack Nicholson in The Shining. And that it's kind of all the girls are culpable in a way for her death. And it's a significant turning point. But again, this episode didn't feel like a finale to me. It felt like a mid-season finale, like that there should maybe be like another 10 episodes or 5 episodes or something after this, because everything represents a turning point and there are some revelations, but there's no actual closure, or anything like that to a lot of the story. But regardless, we see Jackie frozen in the snow, and it's kind of a turning point for the girls because, like, this is the first death that they are responsible for, I think, in a way. Like, we saw Laura Lee die, and but that was her choice. She knew the risks, and she still wanted to try. But in this case, the girls close the door on Jackie and force her to sleep outside, not knowing overnight that it is going to snow and she will freeze to death. But so they're responsible for her death, especially Shauna, because they have a big fight before Jackie goes outside and does not return. So I think that is going to be an interesting thing that they're going to explore moving forward. And I think that really does lead to a lot of the cult, kind of wild woman, darkness that we see them end up as in that first scene. So, like, that was interesting. We find out in the present that Lottie is still alive and that she is maybe kind of like running some shit behind the scenes, that she is potentially responsible for Travis's death, that she seemingly kidnaps Natalie toward the end of the pilot. Susie, who Natalie had asked to look into, who closed Travis's bank account after he died, says, I don't know what you've gotten yourself into, but someone is following me. Who the fuck is Lottie Matthews? And then we see Natalie get kidnapped. We see her kidnappers wearing the symbol that was at Travis's murder site that was carved into the tree that was on the postcard, all that shit. That it seems to all be connected to Lottie. And we then get a flashback to the woods where Lottie, who earlier in the episode killed a bear who seemingly submitted itself to be killed by her, for food, for warmth. And then she places the bear's heart in a tree and like does like a ritual where she says something in French that all I caught was our friends, nos amis, and then says, and let the darkness consume us, I think, or let the darkness set us free. And then that's kind of the end of the episode. So like Lottie, we're seeing become this the leader of this cult potentially. So probably the figure that we saw in that first scene that was like leading the hunt for this fellow survivor who they died and cannibalized. And then we also see in the present, Thaisa won her election for New Jersey State Senate, surprisingly. And we see that it seems to be connected to a ritual where she sacrificed her family dog, cut its head off, and placed it on an altar in the basement with a candle and that same fucking symbol carved into it. And her wife, whose name I always forget, but is played by Rukia Bernard, finds the altar and screams because she's leaving Ty because Ty is fucking crazy. And we're kind of starting to see the extent of that. So like we're getting like some hints at answers, but nothing that is like actually answers. Like when you start your season with a scene, I tell my students this. I teach freshman writing at a community college, and I teach my students this constantly. Like the key to good writing has nothing to do with how good you are at actually like choosing words. And like what we think of as good writing is like choosing your words carefully, diction, syntax, flowery quote unquote language. That does not necessarily make a good writer. It makes an interesting writer, but a good writer writes in a full circle. They play by rules. Your introduction has parts to it, and you follow those parts. Your body paragraph has a structure to it, you follow that structure. Your conclusion that has a function that like that makes a good essay, a strong essay is following rules. And if you introduce something in your introduction, you should come back to it in your conclusion. And that's how I feel about the construction of TV shows and movies and things like that, is that if you introduce something, and this is not my idea. This is Chekhov, right? We've all heard the phrase probably Chekhov's gun, or like if you have a gun hanging on the wall at the beginning of the play, that shit better go off by the end. Literally. It better be fired by the end. Otherwise, why the fuck is the gun hanging on the wall? I feel the same way about this, that if you start your series with a scene of these girls murdering their own and eating her, or them, because it could be Javier, could be Ben, I guess. I mean, no, it seems like it's a, regardless. Eating someone, killing someone. your finale of the season should probably come back to that scene in some way. And this show doesn't do that. It does not wrap up that story. And had the show not taken off in the way it did, had it not been as popular, especially on Twitter with the lesbians, guys, the fandom of the show is fucking crazy, first of all. If you find this episode because you are part of the Yellow Jackets fandom, please examine your life. Because I watched this episode at 8 a.m. Eastern Time on the Showtime app. And there were tweets from 6, 7 hours previously with screen grabs of Jackie's death. You were waiting for midnight to strike. You watched it, you screen grabbed it, and you were tweeting major fucking spoilers about this like an hour after the show became available. And then, like, the objectification of the female characters, it's wild to me. Like, it is very strange. The fandom is very devoted, very rabid. Very, very involved. And I'm gonna say it, kind of fucking crazy. Goes along with the show itself. But regardless, that if the fan, if there hadn't built a fandom, if the response hadn't been as positive, what the fuck kind of ending would this have been? Like, if we did not know there was a second season coming, what fucking kind of ending would this be? Where all we see, we just get more questions that we need, that are going to, or more storylines that are going to be followed in season two. Like, they dispose of Adam's body after Shauna stabs him. But then by the end of this episode, we already know that people are on to him because he's already been reported missing by his family. So already within like minutes of runtime, we get that storyline set up. Misty potentially kills the woman she was holding hostage, or maybe she just drugs her and she's still alive. We don't know. So we have that storyline. We have the Thaisa winning her election, but then also maybe being connected to Lottie, being connected to the potential supernatural in the woods, or maybe Lottie is just psychotic. We have Lottie potentially returning. We have Jeff's friend knowing that he is the one who did the bank, who did the heist of the women, and that hanging over everyone's head. We still have the future where, like, we have not seen in this cannibalism scene who is under those masks. Is it Ben? Javier is missing, and Travis is going to get him. We don't know for sure who killed Travis or why. We don't know what they did with his money. Like, there is just so little closure in this finale. And it's fucking frustrating as a viewer. Like, I really enjoyed the show. I even really enjoyed this episode, but I did not enjoy it as a season finale. It pissed me off as a season finale. And even for a show that I still think that this is one of the best TV series of 2021. I think it is engrossing. I think it is interesting. I think it's fun. I think it's escapist and dark, but also like holds these darker truths about like femininity and womanhood, but also about friendship and like the ties that bind and how far we go to keep secrets and all that shit. And like, but also the lengths we go to keep up appearances when we are unhappy. Like, I think that's a lot of Shauna's storyline with Jeff, is that like she is completely unhappy and unhinged, but doesn't allow herself to be happy because of what happened in the past, because she's trying to keep secrets to cover things up. And that's very interesting to me. But I don't know. I wanted more closure. I wanted, like, obviously we need storylines for season two to be open, but like everything is still open for season two. And I just don't understand why we couldn't get some actual answers. Like, we have hinted at answers that Lottie was involved in Travis's death, that Lottie and Thaisa are maybe working together, or that Thaisa, something happened in the wilderness where Ty, like knew of Lottie's powers and is using that symbol in the ritual to kind of try to focus those powers. So maybe she doesn't know that Lottie is still around, or Lottie isn't influencing her. I don't know. But like, there's no answers really. We now know how Jackie died. That's about it. We know that Jackie is dead and how she died. We know who was blackmailing Shauna. We learned that a couple episodes ago. But everything else is still up in the air. Like, this just did not feel like a finale. It felt like it was like we should still have a few more episodes to go. And I don't like that feeling in season finales. I just don't like it. But I do still recommend the whole series. I mean, like, maybe if you can hold off on watching it until like season two approaches, maybe that'll be more satisfying. Maybe that's part of my problem too, is that like now I know I have to wait so long for more, and that makes me angry a lot of the time too. Like, it's not like back in the day where if a show ended on a cliffhanger, it's like you, okay, it's May and the show comes back in September. So we only have a few months to wait. Like, we could be waiting up to a year for this. Like, who knows, especially with the new surge in COVID, when the show is going to start filming, when it's going to be written, when it's going to release. I don't know. So maybe that's what I'm frustrated by. I don't know. But it's a really cool show. And I don't want it to seem like I'm shitting on the whole thing because I was pissed off by the way the season ended. But I was pissed off by the way the season ended. Oh well. Season two is coming. Don't know when, but it's coming. And all of Yellowjacket season one is now streaming on Showtime. Coming up this week on Monday, Bravo premieres the new season of Summer House. On Tuesday, Hulu is releasing the first episode or two, I am not sure, of How I Met Your Father, the spin-off successor, whatever you want to call it, to How I Met Your Mother, starring Hilary Duff and Kim Cattrall. On Wednesday, Netflix releases the third season of Too Hot to Handle. On Thursday, Looney Tunes comes back to Looney Tunes Cartoons returns to HBO Max for season four. Peacock is releasing a scripted docuseries, which I don't know what that means, but I'm intrigued, with Ed Helms and Randall Park called True Story with Ed and Randall. And then Freeform has the premiere of its new comedy, Single Drunk Female. On Friday, Amazon is releasing its new series, As We See It. The third season of Servant premieres on Apple TV Plus, and Ozark returns for the first half of its final season on Netflix with seven episodes. And then on Sunday, it's the sixth season premiere of Billions. For finales, Women of the Movement finishes up its abbreviated run on ABC. SEAL Team, which moved over to Paramount Plus, ends its fifth season. And the CW reboot of Legends of the Hidden Temple ends on Sunday. My recommendation for the week, I talked a little bit about previously, is The Golden Palace, which just released last week on Hulu. I'm intrigued mostly by this series. Like I mentioned before, I am a huge Golden Girls fan. I wasn't when I was younger. I didn't understand it. And then, once I started watching Hallmark Channel all the time, probably in like 2013, 14, I started catching Golden Girls reruns and like finding myself getting into it and enjoying it and laughing. And now I love it. I really do love the Golden Girls. And the Golden Palace was a one season spinoff that aired on a different network from 1992 to 1993. And it never aired in syndication on its own. It aired as an eighth season of the Golden Girls back when reruns were on Lifetime in the early 2000s. But since then, like since I discovered the Golden Girls, it had never aired on TV and it was not available anywhere. On streaming until January 10th of this year. You could find like bootleg DVDs, and there were a couple of clips that circulated in 2020 on Twitter. A scene from one of the episodes with the Confederate flag was on Twitter. The pilot you could watch on YouTube, which is what I did maybe last year, the year before. But the whole series was only available as like bootlegs on like burned DVDs of pirated material. So there was no official way to watch it until Disney finally released it to streaming on Hulu this past week. And as much as I want to rush through this series because it is very funny and it's so strange and wonderful to have essentially new episodes of The Golden Girls because I've never seen them before. And I want to just speed through them and laugh and feel nostalgic. The theme of this entire podcast is nostalgia, apparently. But I'm like savoring it and watching one or two episodes at a time. So I've only watched the first four episodes so far. And it is very funny, much more so than I thought it would be. I have found myself actually laughing out loud. I think it's more risque than it was in the original run of episodes. And like, I know it got the Golden Girls got more risque toward the end of its run on NBC. So it ended in 1992, in the fall of 92 on NBC, and then shifted to CBS for the Golden Palace. Which I think this was probably right around the time that we got like NBC started chasing a younger demographic, and having a show all about elderly women didn't fit into that demographic, which is wild because now the Golden Girls fans are so young. Right? Like people who are obsessed with the Golden Girls are like my age. We're millennials. We're in our 30s. But whatever. It switched to CBS, which courted an older audience and still does. And we still see NBC chasing that younger demo. So CBS committed to a full season. It did well to begin with. And like maybe at some point the show starts to fall apart and I'll start to see that. But like as I'm watching it now, don't understand why this show didn't run for years. Because to me, it is a perfect extension of the Golden Girls. It is funny, but it introduces new characters. It introduces diversity and youth. And it has Cheech Marin for crying out loud. Like, I mean, it has all these celebrity guest stars. It brings in old Golden Girls characters, but they don't like overwhelm the plot. So it does kind of court new viewers while also paying lip service to older fans. It's wonderful to me so far. The only hiccup that I don't enjoy is the kid, the foster kid that's on the show. And from what I understand, they write him out partway through the first season. So again, maybe that's part of them trying to find their footing, and they never actually did. But then apparently CBS was all set to renew the show for a second season, and then at some point just like changed their minds and just canceled it. And I don't know why. Rue McClanahan is the one who originally said that. She didn't give a reason. And it's just wild to me to think, one, what could have been. Two, I can't believe that I am experiencing new Golden Girls stories like 30 years after the fact, because the show debuted in 1992. So it's the Betty White would have been 100 this week that the podcast released. Golden Palace is turning 30 this year. The series finale of The Golden Girls was 30 years ago this year. Like, it's just so many milestones that we're coming up on with the show that I'm so glad that I can finally see it. And like I said, it's very funny. It's really funny. I don't think the whole premise of it makes very much sense. Maybe that's what turned some people off. But like the writers are the same from the Golden Girls. The creator is the same. It's Susan Harris. It's a lot of the original writers so far. Like I've already seen episodes by Susan Harris and Mark Cherry, who wrote on the Golden Girls, and then who later created Desperate Housewives and Devious Maids and Why Women Kill, which just got renewed for a third season. But regardless, neither here nor there. That it has the same flavor and the same humor, and the characterization is consistent, I think. I just don't think the whole idea of it makes a whole lot of sense. Like, a lot of the Golden Girls episodes were about how they were barely making ends meet, and like there was a whole plot line about like how Betty White's character Rose had to work because she went through all of her ex-husband's retirement money. So that's why they were all always at work, and Dorothy needing to be a substitute teacher. And then when she had her gambling addiction problem in season five, I think that how that affected her financially, and Blanche charging them rent at one point. And there was an episode where Sophia and Rose decided to turn the house into a B&B and charge people to stay there like it was an inn. So like maybe that's the seed of this series. But like they decided after the episode that it was too much work and they couldn't do it. So why they would then turn around and buy a hotel doesn't make a whole lot of sense, other than to like change the setting and to get the girls into a new setting. And one where like they could have guest stars coming in and out, and where it would make sense that like these storyline plots of the week could come and go the way that they did, would make logistical sense. I don't know. But yeah, it's a really weird it's a really weird overall story, but the episodes themselves are just so endearing and, yep, nostalgic. I'll say it again. And funny and raunchy, a little bit raunchier than I remember the Golden Girls being. Like, I mean, obviously there were always jokes about Blanche being a slut, but like I think it was episode two of the Golden Palace. Like, there are just Sophia just walks around in the background, like saying, like just muttering under her breath, and by under her breath, I mean saying out loud, "slut," as she walks past Blanche. And like, I just remember her being that direct all that much on the original Golden Girls. But it's on Hulu now. Whether you're a Golden Girls fan or not, whether you're a sitcom fan or not, whether you are a classic TV fan or not, I just think it is so worth your while. And I'm just glad that it is finally available. Whether you take my recommendation to watch it or not, I just want you to know that it is there. It is, you have the option to put it on. You have it. It's hitting me in the feels a lot because just because it's there, just because it exists, just because I feel like I've been waiting. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, I tweeted like I feel like once a month to Disney, to Hulu, to NBC, to I was like, I don't know who the fuck owns the Golden Palace, but the fact that we're all stuck inside and it's not streaming is wrong. Put it up somewhere. And then 2 years later, it finally is. It's finally on Hulu. So go ahead and stream that now if you are so inclined. All right. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic. I'll be back next week with more news, more recaps, more analyses, and more recommendations. Have a good week, everyone.